And good afternoon. Welcome to Talk Live MSR. We'll be starting shortly today's program, The Crisis in Jewish Education. Our guest today will be Rabbi Pinchas Rosenthal, Dean at Tally Torah Academy of Long Island. And welcome, Rabbi Ben Chaim, speaking to you today from Masorah. And today we're going to be touching on a topic which for some might be a little charged, but we find out that the intermarriage rate is upwards of 50% with conversions, and an additional 25% of Jewish youth today are being raised in homes with dual religions. What are the causes? What are the solutions? And is there a problem with the Jewish education system? Is it teachers? Is there some plan that is being implemented that we can discuss with other educators? In the past, on Masorah, we have discussed, and over the past few months, a few weeks specifically, the Jewish fundamentals, which personally, as I've written and you've read in our Jewish Times, is something which is not really being focused on in yeshivas. Unfortunately, there are plenty of good programs. Chumash, Hebrew skills, Tanakh, learning Gemara, but ask a child why be Jewish and look at the intermarriage rate as well as the amount of Jews that just don't have answers to the basic tenets of Judaism, and it is startling and it is alarming. We've discussed as well with various writers have written in, and as well as Rabbi Rosenthal, who has contributed graciously to our weekly magazine, The Jewish Times. We have highlighted points from the greatest leaders that we have in Judaism, from Maimonides to Rashi, who did not avoid the issue of what the fundamentals are, what makes a Jew and what makes a person not Jewish. A person can lose that status. Are we willing to allow our children to fall into the latter status where they lose their status as a Jew, where Olam Haba is something which is lost, where this life is lost? There are areas that we are failing our children if the statistics are as such. But again, we do have to be focused on what the greatest leaders of Judaism taught us. And if Maimonides had codified 13 basic principles that are a must, and our Siddur, our prayer books that we have, where we have Yigdal, which refers back to the 13 principles, are so important, how come the principles are not part of the curriculum? And when people, as a matter of fact, I was just speaking to a young woman yesterday, and we were discussing the point as to whether or not she should buy a book that dealt with why Jews reject Jesus. And her friends told her she definitely should not buy such a book. Well, the fact is that Rashi was of the opinion that we should learn why the other religions are false. We should know how to respond to our children when they ask us how come we're Jewish and not some other religion. Why is Judaism correct and why is Christianity incorrect? And again, this is not an attack on individuals or religionists, but it is an honest approach, as we do in any area, whether it's math or science. We want to give our children honest answers. What is in line with reality? How the world operates? And if there are multiple religions that all argue with each other, well, by definition, they cannot all be correct. Today, we're inviting Rabbi Pinchas Rosenthal, actually a close friend of mine for 20 years, and for the same amount of years, for 20 years, Rabbi Rosenthal has been in education. He is a graduate, a master's of Columbia University Teachers College, and Smicha, of course. And again, I invite everybody to join us and to listen in. Again, we have the chat window open. And again, Rabbi Rosenthal, we thank you very much for joining us today. And to start out, we'd like to ask you, there is a book out now, I understand, it's called Off the Derech. And the book talks about the fact that there is a 20% defection rate. How would you say the yeshiva education system factors into the equation?
First, pleasure to be here on Talk Live at Masorah.org. I just want to applaud all your effort of bring Jewish education into the 21st century with the use of tremendous technology. So I want to thank you for inviting me as your guest. And to answer your question, The book Off the Derech, which I recommend for all Jewish educators and parents, and quite frankly, anybody who's concerned about maintaining our children to be, Orthodox, brings up some many, many disturbing statistics. One of which is that 20% in her study of people who have gone through the classic yeshiva system, whether it be modern Orthodox, yeshivish, or Hasidic, and for whatever reason have left the fold. The statistic that she brought in is that of those who have left, 73% share that they had a negative Jewish educational experience. And that's something that I'll need to want to explore with everybody today, is exactly what's going on. And I'd like to begin with a story. As you mentioned, I am the Dean of the Torah Academy of Long Island, and we are a modern Orthodox yeshiva, middle school and high school.
And I do want to add to all the listeners that I had the privilege some 15 or 12 years ago, you'll correct me,
yes,
to actually teach with you at this institution, and I can't say enough about the good that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. Thank you so much. There was a large event in Washington, D.C. in November, there was a program which was designed to teach, pretty much it was targeted for juniors and seniors, to be effective civic leaders. In other words, to know how to go to your congressperson and go to your senator, how to advocate on behalf of Israel and other important issues, which is something which is very, very important. And as well, if you're learning the big issues of today, gun control and capital punishment. And the kids were doing remarkably. I was there for the last day of the conference, and they had a congressperson from Utah, and the kids were asking him questions. I felt like I was watching an edition of Meet the Press. The kids were asking very intelligent questions.
Right, what was that?
And that was wonderful. And we had about roughly 160 kids participating from all over the Northeast.
And the program was primarily targeting what exactly?
It was to have kids who were pretty much juniors and seniors, basically our future Jewish leaders, to be able to learn the art of politics, learn the art of, from a Jewish perspective, how to formulate an opinion on these important issues, gun control and capital punishment and other like these important issues. But the educational part was fine. It was the thing that was disturbing was that I came there on the last day of the four-day conference, and one of our rabbis who was functioning as a chaperone shared with me that some of the students earlier that day at the hotel had gone over to a buffet table which was not kosher and took food. So that's two things: they were stealing non-kosher food. So. Okay, and later that afternoon, I joined them for a mincha and the afternoon prayer, where the kids were talking during this 9-minute prayer service during the Kiddushah, the sanctification of God's name, which was, of course, the most significant part. And lo and behold, there were many chaperones in the room. So here we have here's the picture. We have 160 of our kids, the best and the brightest, and we have them. After 12 years of yeshiva education, day school education, they don't feel compelled to observe the basic fundamental mitzvot of thou shalt not steal, and B, thou shalt not eat food which is not kosher, and then tefillah, the prayer, which is a fundamental of Judaism, was just essentially degraded by them incessantly talking through the whole thing. Which brings to the main question, Rabbi Ben Chaim, is what happened to the 12 years of yeshiva education they had? That is the question. Where was that? It was the absence was overwhelming.
And this is Orthodox education. These students all went through 12 years of Orthodox Jewish education?
That is correct. And if this was a one-time thing, it is well known among those who are administrators in yeshivot, such as myself, that kids, that they go, you know, on the weekend when their parents are not around, if they'll go to Manhattan, and if they can get kosher food, great, and if they're closer to a non-kosher pizza place, they'll walk into that store. So we're looking, those who are, want to look, let's put it that way, that even among, you know, we're not talking super rebellious kids, that when the adult is away, the cats are at play, and the question we have to ask ourselves is: what happened here? What was the impact here of the 12 years of Jewish education?
Well, it seems to be very little.
Right. You know, and so I also want to point out, so that what I'm talking about is a story about the that's one dimension of the problem. And I want to shift to a second dimension of the problem, is that in the more we call the yeshivish world, the right wing world. I was speaking to one of the educators, and I was giving him congratulating him because he has a campaign of he plays ball with the kid, he goes bike riding with the students in the class, and he really shows tremendous care, which is so vitally important to forge that teacher-student relationship, that Rebbe-Talmud relationship. And so I asked, you know, congratulations, it's fantastic. He said to me, Rabbi, what is it worth? I said, what do you mean? He says, I teach the 7th grade Gimel class, which would translate as a C class. And he says, by 11th grade, this is of a major, what I call a K-to-K, a kindergarten to Kollel in the tri-state area. And he says, by 11th grade, only a third, out of 18 kids, only 3 remain in the yeshiva. I said, well, what do you mean? He says, last Passover, the second night, the second Seder, I saw one of them drinking a beer, which, of course, would violate the law of Chametz on Pesach. So in that world, in that educational system, he went to the head of the dean of the organization. He says, you know, if you're going to war, and you had a platoon, and you know you're going to lose 2/3, would you fight the battle? So the head rabbi said that no, we still must fight the battle because this is our method of education, and even though it may be failing for these particular kids, we still have to go forward. And what is the method of education? That the focus of in the yeshiva world is 4 to 5 hours of Talmud, and doing generally areas which have little relevance to the kids, and whether the kids can handle the information or not handle information, since the habit has been formed that we must do this first chapter of the tractate Baba Kama or Baba Metzia or whatever it may be, the kids are forced to do it, even if the kids are overwhelmingly bored and they find the material absolutely irrelevant to their lives.
Well, how what would you suggest would be an alternate approach? What would you say is it seems to be the primary problem is the interest of the student is just not piqued. What can be done to address that?
Exactly. Well, let me share with you what people classically say should be a solution, and then I think what I'll get to what I think is the solution. Many people, when I would share a story such as this one to them, they would say, well, Rabbi, don't worry, because they'll go to Israel for a year in Israel, and they'll be inspired and transformed. And first of all, that does happen, but first of all, that's only about 50% on average among, you know, graduates of yeshivot, you know, depending on the school. And the kids that don't go, they continue to live their life as uninspired Jews, and some of them actually, want to join other communities. So the Israel argument, which I call the Israel argument, is still really a dodge and not dealing with a fundamental problem that we're dealing with, because the bottom line is, I'll just give you an additional story, which is sort of is on the extreme side, but I think its trend is growing, is that I had a friend of mine who went to 12 years of yeshiva education plus a year in Israel, and then was working for a firm in Manhattan, and he broke up with his Jewish girlfriend and started to date an Iranian Muslim. And obviously the parents were greatly dissatisfied with this, and they but basically said to me, he said, look, through all my years of Jewish education, I did not get a compelling reason why I should not be with intelligent, sensitive, individual such as this girl that I was dating. So the point of the matter is that, to put it, the goal of Jewish education must be for the 21st century that we make the case for Judaism for the child, that when the child is can be confronted with issues, whether it be dating and how to govern my life, they have to see that Judaism is a system that makes sense, and not just a system of rules, but a system of mitzvah opportunities which are transformational to their character and to their soul.
Now, in terms of the when you say relevant for the 21st century, what we've seen here in terms of what we're doing at Masora is is focusing on what we feel the fundamentals, giving the answers to the students why they should be Jewish as opposed to other religions, and to actually address that, which we've been getting some static and some friction from other people in terms of putting down the other religions, which is not what we're doing. We're trying to expose where the flaws are with lifestyles that are you know, essentially hedonistic, not doing anything for the person in the long range, basically contain many, many lies. And we feel that that is something which, if we explain to the students, then the appeal of the world that we live in the 21st century will be lost. What's your feeling on that?
I agree 100%, but the trick here, which is how to do that, and I think it can be reduced to three fundamental steps. The basically, just to give us a historical sense of things, the reason why the educational system is not producing the dividends that we desperately want is because our educational system is essentially governed and is essentially a Xerox of Europe, of the shtetl, a world where people were surrounded by antagonistic non-Jews. There was no interaction to the Western world, and therefore a system of memorizing it, of texts, and having the cheder experience may have been appropriate for that situation. But now, where it's a totally open environment, here we are having a conversation through the internet and could be touching many, many people, it is not that approach cannot work. So I just like to say, but there was a historical time, Rabbi Ben Chaim, where we had excellence in Jewish education, and we were fully surrounded by the non-Jews, and we did not fall into the lure of what they had to offer. And that really goes back to the golden age of Spain, the time of the era of the Rambam, Maimonides, the Ramban, Nachmanides, who were fully, engaged in Torah, and as well as and Mada, and what you would call secular knowledge or general knowledge. And that is the world we have to return to, that world. And basically, the Rambam, in his commentary of the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin called Chilek, he gives an educational philosophy, which I just want to share, is basically three essential ideas. The first idea is that you have to, the child has to feel that you respect what he feels is the good in life. For example, it's very common for kids, you know, certainly in the modern Orthodox world, to love rock and roll, okay? Now, not all rock and roll is quote-unquote kosher, but be that as it may. The classic approach was to say, you listen to rock and roll, well, you're trace. At that point in time, the child makes a decision that the teacher is from some archaic place, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with this teacher. He's telling me, which I think is a good in life is not good, I don't want to be involved with that. So that's the first thing, is that a child will only care,
You mean to say the child will receive instruction or will be able to be educated by those who give him his due?
Right, give him his due and respects him from where he's at right now. In other words, what the child thinks is good is not good. So that is a system which is going to fail. And that, unfortunately, is a common approach. It's try to take a child and stick him into a pre-existing box and try to shove him into the box. And if you resist, just shove him a little harder. versus understanding that we have a young child, a young neshama, a young soul, that is going to go through a journey of development and maturation. And we have to work with it where it's at. We don't say what you maintain is the good in life is not good. You understand that, and he will, once he feels that you understand him or her, automatically the rapport between the teacher and student is then established. The second thing is first of all, is to define in the teacher's mind, well, what is the good that the child values? And that should become the launching pad of the curriculum. Instead of trying to bring the child to the curriculum, you start with the child and go to the curriculum. Let me give you a very simple example. We at school this year are learning Bereshit, or Genesis, and the beginning part of the year we're dealing with the story of the snake in the Garden of Eden. And I had one child in my class who loves the Star Wars saga. He knows all six movies. He knows all the players. He knows all the words. He knows everything. So in order to gauge that child, I know that he's not inherently interested in the third chapter of Genesis. That's not his world. What is his world? He's in Star Wars world. So I asked him the following question. I said to him, I'll use up a name, Stephen, what character in the Star Wars saga is most similar to the snake, the serpent, what we call in Hebrew, the Nahash? And we're based upon the interpretation of Ibn Ezra, who viewed the Nahash as a walking, talking, thinking being, sort of like the missing link. So immediately, without a second of hesitation, said to me, he said, Rabbi, that's so simple. The Nahash in the story of the Garden of the Garden of Eden is clear, in Star Wars, is the Emperor Lord. The emperor was a person who wanted to rule the empire using his magical skills of the dark force, and he just doesn't care if he has to destroy planets, hundreds or millions of people. He wants absolute control of the universe.
He primarily used his interest to get him to be more attentive in the session.
Correct. And what I found there is that he said, so then there was the interesting dialogue that happened after that. So then one of the students said, well, what, they asked him a question on his theory, saying, well, what about Darth Vader? Would he be a Nahash? He said, definitely not. He said, well, why not? Well, I said, well, if you remember in the third movie, Darth Vader was told by the Lord Emperor to kill Luke Skywalker, which was his son. And then at that moment, Darth Vader was conflicted with a free will decision. Am I going to follow my evil Rebbe, my evil master, the Emperor Lord, or am I going to save my child and kill the Emperor? So the child said, since he was choosing which path to follow, that shows that he had a soul to choose from, and therefore he could not be the Nahash, which had no soul, just had intelligence and an evil inclination. So from that way of seeing that, from showing it the world, the idea through his world, it was an effective instrument for him and the rest of the kids who understood it much clearer because of that.
You know, Rabbi Rosenthal, I'm sure you're familiar with the various versions and editions of the Chumash. There's something called the Stone Edition.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've just embarked on something. Maybe you could have the Star Wars Edition. The child was very attentive. He seemed to be very interested in the class.
Right. You know, the key thing that which has to be promoted is that it is the obligation of the educational, you know, the school and the teachers to understand the world of the child. What is the good in their world? What are the metaphors that they really richly understand? And to find the key ideas of Torah and put it into their language. If you can do that, then you're going to have a learning experience. If you do not do that, all of those hours are going to be a waste of time.
Okay, let me just pause for 1 minute. I just want to remind everybody that we're listening to Rabbi Pinchas Rosenthal, Dean of Tally in Long Island, the Torah Academy of Long Island, who's been gracious enough to accept our invitation to talk today about the crisis in Jewish education. And we're discussing primarily what can be done in order to reverse the tide of the 50% intermarriage and the 20% defection rate that is going on, and why students out of 18, as you mentioned, Rabbi, only three were left by 12th grade that were staying observant. And again, I give the mic back over to you, and you're about to tell us about the third element that is necessary in order to get the attention of the students.
Yes, 100%. So the first thing is understanding the good of the child, what they maintain as a good, and use it as a method of rapport, and to understand not to violate, not to try to contradict what they maintain as a good. And the last point, number three, is to articulate a systematic approach to move the child from his what's called, you know, more childish, immature vision of the good, for example, Star Wars, and to the more sophisticated and more mature definition of the good, which would be the ideas and the ideals of the Torah, and to work from that point on. And that takes a lot of time to develop. We here at the Torah Academy have already spent well over 1,000 hours since June to retool our curriculum to develop methodologies to find ways to go from their world to the true world of the Torah. And that takes a lot of work, and that is something that I can't give over in 5 seconds. But the essential methodology is essentially found, it should be familiar to everybody, it's what they call the Seder-style approach. In other words, when the person who's running the Seder has his own children around that table, he has to engage them at their level, in their realm, and to find the metaphors so they can understand the concept of slavery and the concept of redemption. And that's something which is that every person who runs a Seder has to be an educator for that night, and truthfully for many nights to follow, to capture that world and to systematically give them a new concept, new concept, new concept. And then this brings it back to the thing that you opened up the program with. The fundamental problem in Jewish education today is the absolute silence on the issue of Jewish philosophy, with the Hebrew term being hashkafa.
Correct.
I read in the book of Off the Derech, there's an individual named Rabbi Daniel Mechanic. He runs a project called Project Chazon, where he himself has educated 45,000 yeshiva students both here and in Israel. And he has shared that in his experience, which is vast, that 98% of those students cannot explain why they do anything in Judaism. Why do you keep Shabbos? Why do you put on tefillin? Why do you wear tzitzit? All the different ritual things that are so prevalent and so common that the kids know how to do it, but they have no idea.
And this is something that you are now addressing at Tally.
Yes, that is something that we've always addressed, but it's just that we are doing it in a much more systematic manner. Because that is the killer. Because we live in an open society, they're going to hear ideas, they're going to be challenged, and if they have the equivalent of a second-grade understanding of our system of mitzvot, of commandments, well, they are equivalent to a person who has HIV and is put into a room, a germ-filled room. They're going to get infected. They're not going to be able to defend themselves. They're going to be victims. Whether they're going to be victims to the extent as like the 20% they're going to defect and leave Judaism in observance, or they're going to lead a life of quiet desperation, where they keep Judaism in a mechanical way, it means nothing, only as an instrument to be a part of the community that they've been brought up with. And that's their Judaism. It's a very, very sad state of affairs, where sort of reminds us of the image that Ezekiel Yechezkel says of the Atzamot Yeveshot, the dry bones, that the entire Jewish people are sort of like a big pile of dry bones. And dry bones because their Judaism has no passion. You cannot have feeling if you have no meaning, and that is unfortunately a unfortunate consequence of the European shtetl approach, which has not been which is sort of for whatever reason not included a systematic approach to hashkafa philosophy.
In terms of seeing results, seeing the response of students when you're approaching the fundamentals, to name a few, to know that God exists, not just to have belief, but to have conviction, to know that God is not physical, like they say, that there's a very common theme today is there's a piece of God in all of us. Sort of a way for a person to pat themselves on the back and, well, if God's inside of me, I can't be all that bad. I know that right. there are certain sects within the Hasidic world that they make a statement which is so unfortunate, and they say that since God, they make the one flaw breeds another one. The first flaw is that of one of pantheism, that God is permeating all physical matter. And since he permeates all physical matter, well, he can also permeate sin. Oh, therefore, even in sin, there is some good because God is inside. And I see that because of the first grave error, the first, it's heresy. It's clearly heresy. It goes against the Hashem told to Moshe, Lo yirani adam v'chai, man cannot know me when he's alive. And this was addressed to the most perfected man ever, before or in the future, Lo kam kemoshe. These type of concepts now, the need to teach these, of course, you are addressing, which is fantastic. How do we go further into other schools or other teachers that may, the teachers themselves, I'm sure, are just like the students that you're experiencing, just 30 years older and have degrees, you know, a master's in educations and even smicha.
Right.
What can we do now to reach them and to
Well, it's you're bringing up an excellent question. But the first thing when there is a problem, the first thing has to be the acceptance that there is a problem. Right now, the state of Jewish education today is that there's not really a universal acceptance that this is a problem.
How can they say that with 50% did the marriage?
No, because very simply, because of the intermarriage rate of 56% has to do with essentially connected to the non-Orthodox community, mm-hmm. who do not attend day school education by and large. When we're talking about the 220,000 children who are in day school education, the vast majority being of Orthodox, we're talking that their intermarriage rate is in the low single digits.
Mm-hmm.
I think, although what I'm finding from rabbis who are in the region here, that is growing, despite the unbelievable twist here, that despite the Jewish education, we're still starting to see even intermarriage among people who grew up in quote-unquote a modern Orthodox community and went the entire education. So the tremendous tidal wave of assimilation, which has swept over the Reform community and the conservative community, is now about to engulf the Orthodox community. Not in one moment, but the bulwark against that tidal wave, which would be Jewish education. In my estimation, is not up to the job, as evidenced by the fact that we're having, a 20% defection rate, 1 out of 5. If you had a stock that was losing 20% per year, you would not want to. To maintain it. You'd want to change. If you're working for the company, you wanted some radical surgery. What we have here today, Rabbi Ben Chaim, is that we're sort of in a situation, very much like in the Megillah, where the edict against the Jews has been given to the Jews. The Jews are in a state of sort of like confusion, paralytic confusion. And Mordechai gets out there in the middle of the street and dons sackcloth and ash and starts to cry. So what we need to do is that people have to start, accepting the reality that things are not as we see they are, even though we see, beautiful buildings are built in various Jewish schools throughout America. The attendance is increasing. But we have to look beyond the externals of the numbers and as well as the buildings and see is the education really doing the job. Now, I don't blame the Jewish schools because they're inheriting a habit and a tradition of education which goes back hundreds of years. And that's not so easy to turn the ship around. But Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote in 1955 to the president of Yeshiva University, Dr. Belkin, and saying that we have to retool the curriculum of the rabbinic ordination program, the Smicha program, because it was essentially a Xerox of the Lithuanian Yeshiva, and it will not prepare our American rabbis to deal with the challenges of America. And he put together a 5-point plan. Whether that was fully implemented or not, I don't know. But he pointed out that we just because an educational format was done in Europe does not mean that that's the essence, that essentially is going to be valuable for America 2006. And that's the mistake. And that's, we have to break down that wall of denial. And that's the first step. Once there's a recognition of that we have a problem, then solution will easily flow. But until that happens, very little will happen.
Now, discussing this openly with you, the issues that I see, and I appreciate your insight, you've been teaching in the classroom, again, for 2 decades.
Yep.
The issue, number one, you mentioned, the students have to appreciate the teacher. There has to be a bond. There has to be rapport.
Right.
Of course, you have to have the conduit in order that transformation can be disseminated from, you know, the teacher to the student. So once we have the conduit opened by the good rapport, now the teacher has to start relaying to the student some primary information.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, the first thing that I think about is to have correct concepts of Judaism and what distinguishes Judaism from others, and that would also necessitate, by definition, that we understand the flaws of the other religions. I don't really see this being taught anywhere. What's your
opinion? We have done exactly that this year, Rabbi Ben Chaim. This year we tackled something that is generally skipped. We dealt with the first parsha. The first Torah portion of Genesis, which is, you know, Genesis, and in that we dealt with all the thorny issues. We dealt with the issue of God. What is the soul? When we got to the issue of Tzelem Elokim, the divine soul, all these issues, all these different perspectives. The Christian perspective is when the verse says, "Let us make man," that proves the validity of the Trinity, that shows a foreshadowing of the Trinity. We showed that the impossibility of that, because it says, "Here, Israel, Hashem, our God, Hashem is God is one," so that cannot be true. We also showed about the incorrect Kabbalistic notion of Chelek Elokim Mal, that there is a portion of God with among all of us. That is a misunderstanding of a Kabbalistic notion, and which makes that God is divisible into 9 billion parts and counting. So that is obviously a pantheistic notion, a polytheistic notion. So we, you know, the fact that the Lord is one disproves that.
And
we also got into the issue of that we're made in the image of God, that God must be physical. Because we're physical, he must be physical as well. So all these issues we dealt with very early on in the first chapter, as well as the issues of is the world 15 billion years old, or was it created in 6 days? You know, and all issues that they're going to experience and encounter when they get out into the quote-unquote real world. So we dealt with all these issues part of our Chumash, our Bible program. And that's why we did start in the very beginning, because the beginning of the Torah does deal with all these issues in a very clear way.
So you are actually showing what the tenets of Judaism are, and simultaneously showing how these are believed, meaning how the false ideas are accepted by the other religions, thereby giving the students a recognition of where Judaism is set apart from the others.
Correct, and it's coming organically from the text. So it's not a separate discussion, but it's incorporated within the study of the Bible, of the Tanakh. So therefore, they can see all the possibilities, possible what we call misreadings of the Bible, and how our tradition, our Masorah, points to the authentic understanding.
Now, it would seem to me that seeing that you are finding success with this, I mean, the students, I'm assuming, are gravitating towards this approach. It sounds like...
Yes, they're very happy with it.
Yeah, from Stephen, who was perking up when you brought in Star Wars, something from his own repertoire.
Right.
And now that he was able to engage and even distinguish between, as you mentioned, one player in the series from the other, and showing how free will and the Bechira are basic tenets. And that I congratulate you. That is very... it's a very effective method. So you are seeing results from this approach now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let me just give you a very simple another thing that is a very big challenge in Jewish education today is the wholesale transmitting of the Midrashim, the Tannaitic parables on the Bible, and teaching our children as these being a literal account of what occurred, transpired in the Bible. That is a source of overwhelming confusion in both the philosophical ideas that you mentioned, as well as understanding what's going on in the stories.
You mean, for example, when people read Rashi's to first graders and tell them it's fact?
Correct. And sharing these Midrashic stories without giving a concept of what is a Midrash and how should it be approached. And that I find it to be universally universally ignored, and that is even trans-denominational. I find people from conservative day school education having the same issue. So it's sort of a trans-denominational issue of viewing Midrash as being a literal account of what is occurring in space and time, and what occurring in the Bible, and that transforms the entire Bible experience, which is the foundation stone of all of Judaism, into fairy tales. And that is a massive problem. And that is a massive problem.
I mean, adults that, like you mentioned earlier, have still retained their first grade understanding of Torah and Rashi. And they're, you know, well into their 50s. And
We have a general rule at the school that, you know, all of our teachers are encouraged to share a Midrash in the classroom, provided they can give an explanation of what the Midrash is pointing to give an interpretation of the Midrash, to show what is the metaphor really pointing to. And this way, the children have a clear distinction in their mind between the text of the Torah and the story behind the story, which is the Midrash. And that is a massive stumbling block to a Jewish education. Just if that alone would be removed, that would be a tremendous liberating step. But again, I don't find that to be the case.
Right. Is there any, in terms of moving forward or reaching other teachers, you know, getting the word out? I mean, again, we try doing that. We have been repeatedly including Maimonides' 13 principles in the Jewish Times for the past month. And people may say, hey, wasn't this printed last week and the week before? The answer is yes. You know, we're trying to get it out there. In terms of, I'm just thinking as you're speaking, perhaps contacting the Board of Jewish, the BJE, the Board of Jewish Education, or PAJE, organizations that are very large, that have a far reach, that have an effect on curriculum. And I know that am I pronouncing it right, the PAJE?
Partnership for Excellence in Jewish Education.
Right, now I understand that they do send out loads of material. And I'm not sure if they're hitting just conservative or reformer.
Well, they're an organization that deals with trying to provide the best practices of different Jewish schools across America.
I would suggest that, you know, some sort of a formal outline submitted to them, and also the Board of Jewish Education, showing your findings and the results that you're finding in the class. Let them, you know, find out. I'm sure that this is something you've considered already.
Absolutely, you know, it's not such a simple thing. You just can't hand somebody, here's a book of curriculum, this is the best one, or this is something we found tremendous success. It's something that I've been grappling with because, you know, when we're not talking about a change of a school. You're talking about really a civilizational change. You're talking about an orientation toward knowledge which has not been really the dominant approach since the Middle Ages, since the Golden Age of Spain, which officially ended around 1492. So that approach to wisdom of having a broad perspective and really engaging with philosophical issues in a very real world way has really been absent from our civilization for nearly 600 years, for 500-600 years.
Well, you had quoted earlier that Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha, had also mentioned, as you mentioned, that there was a need back in the 50s to revamp the curriculum.
Correct. I will say this is not my own insight. I mean, this is something that many people who are in Jewish education do are aware of, but I've just been blessed with a circumstance where I could, have a buy-in from both the board level of the school as well as the Judaic Studies teaching staff.
Is there a central voice or certain personalities from whom trickle down new modes of operation in the yeshivas?
That's the interesting thing. There are, you mentioned the BG, there are organizations that are umbrella groups, but largely the schools are fairly autonomous. So there is no one curriculum. And for example, in the state of New York, we have the Regents approach, Regents curriculum, which all schools, all public schools and many private schools had to adhere to. So you have one central curriculum. That is not the case with Jewish education anywhere. So, it's something that has to, I don't have a simple answer to that. I really don't know. We are personally doing, we are sending out articles, many of them, published in the Jewish press, of course in the Jewish Times, other local papers and trying to get a different approach out there and try in a more of a grassroots kind of way to do it. I don't have a methodology to bring this to the forum of the entire Jewish community at one fell swoop. I don't know how that can be done.
From the individuals or your colleagues, maybe people above and below that you may have mentioned this to, has there been any feedback in terms of, you know, their reaction to implement?
There, you know, it's interesting. When I speak, I've done a number of public speaking about these issues. When I speak to those who are lay people, you know, lay leadership, people who have gone through the yeshiva system, they themselves maintain, you know, rapidly and quickly agree that this is an approach and the old approach that they went through or quote-unquote suffered through was clearly inadequate. I mean, basically, anybody, you don't want them to have to be a PhD in Jewish education to recognize that if a child finds the education both boring and irrelevant, that you're not really succeeding. So I find the response insofar as the Jewish educators to be mixed, because there is some sort of a defending of the existing methodologies. Again, you know, old habits die hard is pretty much the phenomena. So I don't know. There's no silver bullet here, unfortunately.
Right. I want to mention that we're listening to Rabbi Pinchas Rosenthal, the Dean, Torah Academy of Long Island. My name is Rabbi Moshe Minchayim, and we do this program periodically where we try to tackle some important issues. Try to not just discuss the problems, but maybe seek out solutions. I know Rabbi Rosenthal about 20 years, and about the same amount of time he has been teaching in the classroom and has seen the problem with a 20% defection rate where students at the time of 12th grade and beyond are leaving Judaism. And these are students that are going through your regular modern Orthodox schools.
It's not limited to modern Orthodox. It applies to also the we call the right-wing world and even the Hasidic world. I don't have a specific breakdown over each community, but there is defection in every camp. And on top of that, Rabbi Chaim Ben Chaim, is that the fact is that even if they don't officially start eating non-kosher and violating the Shabbos, if a child, after all those years of education, that the entire exercise of keeping the Torah is a painful, excruciating, robotic experience that means nothing to them, I would also call that a tremendous failure as well.
Yes, I agree. I just wanted to mention that we'd like to invite anybody who's joining us. We see there's a number of people that are on the chat room as well as many others that have downloaded the player and listening from your desktop. You can either click on your desktop player at the very bottom where it says join the live chat, and you can come to the chat. And those of you who are in the chat already, you can type in at the bottom of your screen comments and questions for Rabbi Rosenthal regarding the topic that we are discussing. Rabbi, go ahead. I'm sorry. You were just discussing how it's not only in the...
Yeah, there's a sociological category called orthoprax, which I want to bring to everybody's attention.
I've never heard of. What is that called? Ortho...
Orthoprax.
Okay.
Prax mean like practical. In other words, there are many people who've gone through the yeshiva educational system and have been completely uninspired. And they really don't have a real reason to keep the Torah other than it's their ticket for acceptance into the community that they've been brought up, which means that they're walking the walk and they're talking the talk.
Well, they have some sense of need of belonging, you're saying.
Right, but it's essentially purely a social phenomenon. It has nothing to do with what you're focused on, is that is this true or not true. It has nothing to do with that. It could be true, it could not be true. The main element is the quality of the issue of is that this is my ticket into the Jewish community, which I've been brought up with, and I like it, and I want to remain there. So if I have to wear a yarmulke, I'll wear a yarmulke. If I have to eat kosher, I have to keep kosher. If I have to belong to the synagogue, well, I'll belong to the synagogue. It's just part of a method of belonging, which, you know, is something, but insofar as the issue of truth or the issue of this is a system of growth, that is not the case. And there are large parse, and this is obviously very difficult to statistically find out what percentage are that, but many, many, many families, kids who have gone through the system feel, their adherence, their loyalty to Judaism is essentially for social reasons only, and not because of any truth behind it. And that, I think, is a tremendous tragedy. And that's really a consequence of having an education, which is... you're asking a child to fight a 21st century war with 17th century weapons. It's just not going to work.
Yes, it is unfortunate. I mean, they just are not enjoying being in school. I mean, that's an old story.
Right.
And that's been depicted in numerous novels and over the years, but it really should be the opposite.
Correct. That is our tradition. We say a blessing every morning on Birchat HaTorah, Varevna. It should be sweet, that the illumination of Torah should be a positive experience, pleasant experience. And unfortunately, if you speak to people who have gone to yeshiva education, they will find that as being not the case. Now, a person might say, well, Rabbi, they feel the same way about general studies. And I think that's a problem as well. But that's really beyond the conversation here. I think all exploration into knowledge should be that which is something which is illuminating and exciting. And if it's done properly, it can be. Our next challenge, in addition to updating our Jewish education, is also the general studies, to make it a much more, instead of didactic learning where the person is sitting to hours of lecture, but rather a more Socratic, involved learning, that is something which is much more appealing to the child and gets them involved, gets the blood running, connects the child to the relevance of the subject matter, and it makes the hours of day they're in a school pleasant.
I appreciate that. We're just going to close in about a few minutes. Are there any last comments or any messages you'd like to share with any of the parents, teachers that have joined in that you feel might be the next step?
I think the first step is that, as we mentioned earlier, is that the first step is that there should be to create an awareness within the Jewish community that we're not doing the job, and to break down the wall of denial that our kids are really being prepared for America. The yeshiva are doing an excellent job of preparing the kids academically for college, but I would think, as far as Jewishly, we're not where we need to be, and we're starting to see the various consequences of ignoring that. And as we know, that if there's a chronic problem which we ignore, the problem is not going to get better magically, but it's going to get worse. And what people can do, especially what I see as a solution, is that people who are the consumer, people who are paying the $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year for day school education, yeshiva education, should have conversations with the board of directors and say, you know something, my child is bored. It is all pain. Why can't we talk about reworking the curriculum to make it interesting, to make it inspiring, to making it relevant? I would like to say that Rabbi Soloveitchik, in one of his premier addresses to the Mizrahi Convention back in the 1960s, he said it is the 14th ikar, the 14th fundamental of Judaism, that Judaism can exist in any environment, in any culture. And if a person denies that, and a person says you cannot make Judaism relevant to America, you're saying that the Torah is third rate, is inadequate, lacks the truthfulness that it really is. And we maintain that the Torah is true. It's just that the mode of communication to the next generation has to be adapted to the environment, to 21st century America. Right. If we do that, we will see tremendous blessings.
Well, I appreciate you joining the show again. That was Rabbi Pinchas Rosenthal, Dean at Tally, at Torah Academy of Long Island in New York. We thank you again for joining us today. And we hope that you'll join us again soon and continue contributing to the Jewish Times with your thoughts and insights on Jewish education.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All the best. Have a great day.
You too, Rabbi.
Bye.
Right, well, that concludes today's session on Talk Live on Mesorah.org. Again, we do the program periodically. We send out emails in order to let you know about the next topic. And we invite you to join us back in the future. You'll look at the Talk Live page, the blinking icon on the left-hand of your screen. It shows the schedule. There are clocks there. This way, if you're coming from a different region, you'll be able to determine exactly when the classes will be giving, the topics, and to join in. Again, the class is live. The program is live. So you can join with your chat, and periodically we do invite calls on the topic. Today was more of just a dialogue, myself and Rabbi Rosenthal, and we do appreciate his involvement in education. Again, 20 years veteran teacher. He's doing great strides out there on Long Island. Again, I taught side by side with him for a few years when the school was just getting off the ground in Comac. One of the few institutions that are really concerned to the point where they have revamped their entire curriculum in order to make sure the students love Judaism and don't look to run out of school at the last day of 12th grade. And he's having success with it. Not only that, but addressing the unfortunately very much avoided tenets of Judaism. Maimonides' 13 principles, which again we try to assist as well and make that available. So again, we thank Rabbi Rosenthal for joining us today. Again, keep on schedule. You'll see our Talk Live link, and you'll be able to see the next class. That's it for today, and we wish you all a very good day and hope that we've inspired you, and this will not just be the end at the end of the program today, but you'll discuss it and share the input that we've gained from Rabbi and just from our discussions. And we hope to see you next time here on Talk Live at Misora.org.